to truly believe in the magic.
Hey Magic fans, I'm Mikey and welcome to this week's episode of Let's Talk Magic, an Orlando Magic podcast. On today's episode, we're going to recap last week's games, including Thursday's impressive win over the New Orleans Pelicans, how the defense turned the game on its head, and we're also going to look ahead to another pivotal week with just 11 games remaining. But before we dive into the show, this week I'm joined by Paul and Gary. Paul, you've been having a good time this weekend. Partying it up.
It's been a very good weekend. Yeah, it's been my granddaughter's first birthday. So, as with every good first birthday party, it's just an excuse for adults to get together and have a party. So, yes, we've had a good time. It's been very nice. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Somewhat tired, I'm not going to lie. Nice to see that we all got the memo about wearing black as well.
Slimming. That's my excuse.
Trust me, after this weekend, I need something that is slimming. Nothing's going to work. Far too much beer.
Oh, good man. Sounds like a good time. Gary, how's your weekend been, my friend?
Very quiet, Mikey. Just staying out of the way. I can't compete with the drinking exploits of Mr. Big and Mr. Jones. How are you?
I'm all right, mate. I'm good. I had my first trip to Liverpool yesterday since pre-COVID, so that was a good time. Went and saw the Liverpool legends. It was funny. It's just one of those things.
That game was it.
Yeah, you can't take it seriously. It's like you get somebody has a heavy touch and the ball gets away from them. They're like, don't worry about it. I'll just let it go. Or I remember Gerrard come over. I sat in the Anfield Road end and Gerrard come over in the corner and took a corner in the first half. And he put one in. Anyway, I think the ball went out and he walked back towards the middle as if to say, I'm not taking another one, somebody else could do it. It was a bit like that in the first half. But yeah, they were 2-0 down, come back 1-4-2. And yeah, it was just a nice day out. It was it was pretty cold at their mind, but it tends to be up north where you lot live. So us southerners aren't used to it, but that's it.
The impending arrival doing?
Yeah, we're doing all right. We've got, less than 4 weeks now to the due date. So as you guys know, I'm going to make today my last episode for a few weeks, potentially. So we're just waiting for it all to happen, to be honest. We're pretty much organised. Becky's doing as well as you can. So all good, my friend.
We're waiting on the arrival of Paolo, Franz, Judah, Clark.
Yeah, we'll see.
It's not named for a girl.
No, it's not. It's not. It is going to be another girl, by the way. Yeah, exactly. So
it's not named for a girl, like I say, mate.
No, we could have Penny. That would count.
Yeah, so yeah.
We'll see.
Yeah,
I heard a rumor that it was
Penny Tracy. You're all right.
I heard a rumor that it, from someone who shall go unnamed, that they wanted Marcolina. Who could that be?
What, as in after Mark Davis?
Must be, yeah.
His favourite referee. Oh, dear, bless him. Yeah. It's actually, it's going to be pretty chilled. We're not going to have a ref rant tonight, which is probably just as well
I'm going to say, can you imagine if he'd been on, if G had been on? Oh, my. I do actually feel that we're missing a trick. We'll just get G on at some point tomorrow to record a very short segment that you can edit into this. Otherwise, I feel that we are missing a moment.
Bless him.
I think, in fact, we all get G to do a post-game reaction. How I do the game preview, G should do a post-game reaction immediately on coming off of watching it.
Are we still going to be doing PG-13 content? Maybe if he swears in Welsh, then we'll get away with it.
In G's defence, he's not doing very well online at the moment, is he? With some of his takes, he's been getting roasted on a few tweets. Gary's been pointing out to me. But
I came up on mine and I was like, what's going on here? And I just saw this like thing and there was a gun. I was like, oh, God.
G's off of one.
Yeah, I'm not. Click play on those in the office because it was like the quotes, and I just looked at it. I thought, or people are replying my videos, and I was kind of like on my lunch, and I thought, yeah, I'm not press play with the sound on. You don't know what's coming back.
Well, he's going to be back on Thursday on our next episode, I think. So, yeah, you can look forward to, he might even squeeze one in there for sure. So let's get into the episode then. First thing I want to talk about is Jonathan Isaac. There's nobody I want to talk about more tonight. I think this guy deserves all the credit he's due after his performances lately, and especially since the All-Star break. To me, Jonathan Isaac is the best defender in the NBA. It's not even a debate. There's nobody on this planet who even comes close to the size, the speed, the athleticism, the versatility and impact of J.I. So I want to talk about what we've seen from J.I. this week more specifically. So since our last episode, the Magic have beaten the Toronto Raptors 96-111 last Sunday. Then we blew out the Hornets 92-112. Then we beat the Pelicans on Thursday 106-121. And last night we had that another tough loss against the Sacramento Kings. But I want to highlight the games.
Three on the trot.
Yeah, that's it. But I want to highlight the games against the Pelicans and the Kings and J.I.'s impact against two very good teams, Paul. We had stretches where we saw on Thursday J.I. matched up against Zion. So what's your thoughts on what you've seen from J.I. recently, more specifically since the All-Star game, and how did he affect that New Orleans game for you?
J.I. is just so switched on when he comes in. He has got a focus that we haven't seen in quite some time. He's confident in, I think he's confident for the first time in his health on the court, which has made a hell of a difference to him. It's a misfortune for whoever is placed up against J.I. because they are just getting smothered and swarmed by this guy. He is relentless in his pursuit of a player on defense. The last five games, I'll look at the last five games. His impact has been incredible, and his scoring is creeping up and up and up. We have to give credit
creeping
to what
he's skyrocketing, Paul.
Hey, well, it's, what is it, 12.6 points per game in the last five games he's averaging. And his career average on points is 8.5. His average for this season is 7. So he's all of a sudden he's found nearly 6 points a game extra in these last five. And he is putting so much energy. He went off absolutely gassed, didn't he? Against the Pelicans. He'd worked so hard. And as good a player as Zion Williamson is, J.I. made him look ordinary at times. And it's not necessarily getting the blocks. It's not the deflections. Players see that they have J.I. up against him and move the ball on. That will go. That is never going to get seen in a box score. But nobody is actually looking and thinking, you know what? I'll take this guy on one-on-one, or I'll try and shoot over him. He's just absolutely smothering people. And it's amazing to see. And we're seeing slowly those minutes getting ramped up. We're starting to increase those minutes. Mm-hmm. And you can see that this guy is ready for the playoffs. He could be that difference maker for us. We all said at the start of the season that getting J.I. back was like getting a new signing. We'd missed him for a long while, and slowly throughout the season his impact has increased until you get to this point where we've been for the last few games, particularly since the All-Star, more so since the last five games. And he is elite. I don't think there's a better word for it about the man. And I would agree with you, Mikey, that he is one, if not the best defender in the league. He is top three, without a shadow of a doubt. Yeah, I mean, what can you say about the man? I'm lost for words at his performances recently.
I don't remember a defender that can do what he does in terms of people. You'll always get fans from other teams and people debate that Giannis can do it, Wembanyama can do it, but I'm not sure they're capable of guarding point guards and shooting guards like J.I. can. Yeah, bigger players, that both of those are really good, but his, like you said, Paul, it feels like at the moment, the only way of somebody beating J.I. is when he's out on the perimeter, somebody with a foot speed who's actually going to be able to drive past him, and maybe somebody makes a cut and they use that assist to get around him. But like you said, players are driving into the paint. They're going, oh no, J.I.'s there. Turn around and dribble the ball back out. He's such a deterrent.
He's not intimidated by somebody having pace, because he's blessed with pace himself. He's not intimidated by a player having an ability to move, because he has good lateral movement. His intelligence and awareness of other players on the court allows him to be reacting to those threats as well. And the other thing that he doesn't back away from is going up against a very big, strong man. He's willing to take that physical challenge. And that's where, for me, his own confidence of being healthy again is having a massive mental impact on his game. He is confident enough to go into the physical collisions. He's confident to, and we don't see him take many charges, but he's confident enough to take those physical impacts in a game. He's under the rim and battling, willing to go for any rebounds. And his three-point shooting is becoming a real threat. 58% in the last five games, nearly 59%.
Yeah,
that's something that, and we've needed that badly. We've needed that badly. And coming from the bench, my God, what a weapon to have to come from the bench.
For now. Might be a starting soon.
Yeah, who knows?
If he keeps playing like this. Gary, have you got anything to add from Thursday's game?
From the game against the Pelicans, I've just felt it was interesting. Like, obviously, we'll come on to last night in a moment, but I felt it was interesting to notice the body language of Zion Williamson. Because Zion's a bit like a bull, and he was looking at, when he had the ball with GI, he was like, you could see, I put a tweet out saying, like, Zion doesn't fancy, they just don't fancy it.
People pass the ball away, don't they?
But how many players have we seen this season now where he's been matched up against, where it will come onto it, but he gives Sabonis an awful time last night. He gives Zion an awful time. He's given Giannis an awful time. He's given Wembanyama an awful time.
KD.
You know,
KD the list, to season low.
The list is endless of all-star, superstar, top 75 or top 100 NBA players in the future. It says it all, really.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was another impressive win. It was a win we definitely needed.
That second unit, Brick coming on, and when we were, because we at that point, I think we were about 12 down, weren't we? We'd fell behind.
Yeah.
Starters hadn't, they'd got going, but they hadn't really. That second unit coming in with Cole and J.I., man, they are good.
Yeah, and shout out to Cole, because he's playing well as well at the moment as well. The Magic had another heartbreaking loss last night against the Sacramento Kings. We had that double overtime thriller back in January in Sacramento, and I was there last season to watch Fox hit that buzzer beater three as that went to overtime. But the Minister of Defense checked in during the first quarter after the starters got off to a slow start last night. And would you say this is probably his best performance of his career last night? Is that fair to say? But Gary, what did you think about J.I. last night? I know you watched the game live. And despite losing the game, having J.I. play at this level must be scaring teams who think they might be facing us in the playoffs.
Yeah, he changed the game within seconds because, as you said, it was a bad start. We were on a bad run. It looked like a gap would open up against a quality team in Sacramento. You don't want to fall behind early. And within seconds, he changed the game at both ends of the floor, not just on the defensive end. He brought energy, he brought leadership, he brought a presence. defensively, the Kings went from looking potent to impotent, is the best way I can put it.
Yeah.
I know Paul's been mentioned in the last five games, but if we look at the last 10 games where he's been averaging 17 minutes plus a game, his field goal percentage is almost 69%. Three-pointers are creeping towards 63%. He's just shy of 82% from the charity stripe. 5.3 rebounds, 1.5 blocks, 0.8 steals, 11.8 points. So if we look at that just as it is, as a 10-game sample on those minutes, which aren't big, that's why you would say, well, it's sixth man of the year numbers, just on 17 minutes plus a game. Right, so Paolo, if you do the comparison, your best players are usually on 35 minutes per game, roughly. So if you just doubled that for GI, it's putting them at 34. Now, we know the issue. We know the issue is it's the minutes restriction. But if you doubled those minutes for GI, and I know the stats are probably not going to stay the same, but hypothetically, if they did, you're looking at just under 24 points per game, on three blocks, nearly two steals, 10.5 rebounds. So you've basically got all-star level production in the last 10 games from Jonathan Isaac. So that going into the playoffs where he's building that level of momentum is why I think certain teams built in certain ways probably don't want to be playing Jonathan Isaac, particularly in round one when he gets rest time. That's my take on that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, mate. His impact's just been insane. And we had this conversation before, Gary, about before the injuries, JI was my favourite player. And last night we saw, I don't remember the last time we saw the home crowd at the Kia Centre react to a player coming off the bench and having, was it an eight-minute spell that he come in the first quarter into the second, and he come out absolutely blowing, but the ovation that the crowd gave him of what he did, and it's like I said, he gave us a real offensive punch last night, but it feels like every single challenge he's making at the basket, whether he, like Paul said earlier on, doesn't matter if he's getting a block or deflection, he's making players miss. Like, players aren't scoring very often against JI, even when he's up around the basket and defending the rim. And he had the impact in the second half as well when he came off the bench. It's just fast forward in the next season. You just hope that he can build on his conditioning to the point where next season we can start to see 25, 30 minutes a game. And like, it is a scary thought about what JI could be.
We haven't seen Jonathan Isaac play with this level of intensity, this level of comfort or competitiveness since the 2018 season. And I know he's been out for a long while in that intervening period, but he is playing hard. He is playing hard. He's confident in his own ability. And you can see that he feels comfortable out there. He believes he belongs out there again.
Yeah,
and that for a Magic fan, that's an amazing player to have. You can tell he's doing well because you're starting seeing his name in this player. What player would the Lakers look good with? The Lakers would look good with Jonathan Isaac, and they're offering us £2.50 and a bag of peanuts in the trade machines. So you can tell that he's doing well because you're seeing his name linked with. Not linked with, but on the trade ideas that you see his name appearing for the big teams as being a player that would be good there. That tells you in itself that he's reminded people of the player he was, and when we aren't wrong in saying this, in 2018 we were talking about that this guy could be a defensive player of the year.
I love the trade ideas, by the way, Paul.
They're fantastic, aren't they, mate?
It's kind of like, maybe what we'll do is we'll put this trade package together, and the people who watch that player play the most might not realize that he's any good, And then hypothetically, they'll all sign it off on Twitter, and then it's real.
Yeah. I mean, you looked at last night's game. I'm not going to say single-handedly, because that's unfair that to the guys who were around him. But he dug us out of that hole where we were down heavily early on. He came in and he was the catalyst for turning us around. The impact he had in his first 60 seconds on the court was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I mean, there were a couple of bits where perhaps he could. Alex Len got a couple of blocks on him, didn't
he? He had one, definitely. Yeah.
Yeah. Perhaps they were moments where you think, oh, I mean, that would have been another 2 points. Would it have changed the momentum? Who knows? Did that give them a belief when they got them blocks? Who knows? But Jonathan Isaac impacted in every way he could on that call last night. And we haven't seen him doing that for so long. And it's so good to see.
Mm-hmm.
Agreed. Have you guys, Paul, I know you've not had much of a chance, but are there any stats or numbers you guys have come across that sort of help explain how vital he's been for the bench unit and the impact he's having when he's on the court?
I don't know. I mean, I'm going to go slightly different there because you said I haven't had a chance to have a look at all. Literally, I knew what we were going to be talking about as I pressed to join the meeting. I think it's more a confidence that he comes on court and he's exuding that confidence that we've been talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives a lift to those around him. That, you know, his coming on the court is providing a belief to those who are playing with him. It's just phenomenal. I don't know what his plus minus was for last night, but it must be off the charts. And it's that they know that they have a player with them on court who will be given a task, will stick to that task, and has the basketball awareness to come across and help in a position where another teammate can be on a bit of an island, perhaps. He's willing to work across and help others out. I just think it's an overall confidence thing with him.
Unsurprisingly, plus 26 last night.
Wow, is that what it was last night? Yeah. That's phenomenal.
Just adding on what Paul said there with GI, I think obviously 2018, Paul, you referenced as being like the best Isaac we've seen until recently. But I think the big difference in the Jonathan Isaac we've seen as he's got confidence back in his health is that he's a man now.
Mm.
That Jonathan Isaac we saw in the early days in Orlando, he was, you know, he was fresh out of college and he's probably done his growing up in the time when he's been injured. So that the guy we're getting now has grown into his frame and we just hope that his body will hold up. Because when GI was kind of pre-injury, I was always along the lines of a prime Jonathan Isaac would be a 17 to 18 and a half points per game player who did better than anything Rudy Gobert could do on the defensive end when he was cleaning up the Defensive Player of the Year awards. But like Mikey, you were asking about stats there. The big ones really is, for me, is how he spreads the floor on the offensive end. We're not losing anything having GI in the game. Not that he was a bad offensive player before, because he never really got a chance to establish his rhythm in the pecking order of where he was on the old Steve Clifford Magic teams for various reasons. But yeah, totally different. But this team here, GI, when he's actually standing at the three-point line, you're not wincing, like, not that you were before, but you're kind of like, there's a good chance this is going to go in. You're hopeful. And then when he's actually in the paint now, he looks dominant. He's got the frame, he's got the confidence, his athleticism is still there. So he can go up and he's getting a lot of big dunks, dominant dunks, I would say. So, like obviously the stats say about the field goal percentage and the shooting percentage and the 3-point stuff. But I think beyond that, it's the confidence in and outside. Because GI for me was always about defensive game and then what he would get offensively. But last 10 games, as I said, you double those numbers up. He's a 20 points per game plus scorer. If it continues, we'll see.
Oh, what was it last night? It made 3 of 4 from range. I remember him missing one.
Mm.
3 of 4, 3 of 5 from range. I do remember him missing one. But
it's the stroke he had.
I watched the game in about
4. Yeah.
3 of 4. I remember I watched the game in about 4 parts today. But you, like you say, you just have a confidence in his offensive abilities now. That's a really good point, Gary. But it's a completely different team. His role in this team is completely different to that in the Steve Clifford era.
Yeah.
With the different guys around him.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, couldn't agree with you guys more. Final stat line last night was 25 points, 7 rebounds, 2 blocks, 10 of 13 from the field, 3 of 4 from 3, and it was plus 26.
Against a good team.
And against a really good team.
They are a
really good team.
They are a good team. They played some good basketball last night.
Just wish
because of the final.
Bloody beat them. Well, have you guys got anything else you want to add about the Kings game in particular? G's not here to talk about the call down the stretch up one with 25 seconds to go, the inbound, the ball to Fox, and there was a little push on the hip, but that wasn't where we lost the game, I know. But
it was a foul.
Yeah.
Honestly, it was like, if you want to talk about refs for me, talk like on that. My bigger issue was what Sabonis got away with during the game. If it had been the other way around and Fox had done that to Suggs, I'd have wanted the foul call.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of the way I looked at that. And we didn't win that game last night because we turned a key point in the game. We settled for shots from outside.
That final possession.
Yeah.
That was a sloppy final possession.
It wasn't meant to be what it was, apparently, but still, like, the Kings bringing in Alex Len, and then he disrupted Ingles. I thought Ingles had a poor game as it goes. I thought Suggs had a poor game. I thought Carter had a bad game. Lots of reasons why we lost that game last night, but the call at the end, it wasn't a nice call to see, and it wasn't the way you want to see a game decided, but ultimately, whatever way we dress it up, whether it was exaggerated, whether it was delayed reaction, whatever, but if it'd been the other way around, I would have wanted the foul. As soon as it happened, I was like, that's a foul.
I said to you guys before we started recording, I was only half watching at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I was sat intently forwards. I'm well into the game, but I've got virtually no commentary on because everybody's talking. And I turned away at that point, looked back, saw the over and back. Okay, we've got possession. Yes, this is it. We've got the ball back, job done. Look away, carry on talking. Look back and Fox is shooting free throws. I've got absolutely zero idea how it had happened, how we'd gone from what I thought was an over and back to being, we're now facing free throws. Looking at it, I ended up rewinding it to take a look. And there was a touch. There was a touch. It was a delayed call, but I think there was far, far more important issues that we had. 13 turnovers again is far too many, and we have to tidy that up. Until we tidy that up, we're always going to make life hard for ourselves. And we seem to miss quite a few free throws again last night. I don't know how many we actually missed. It was better than I thought. 13 to 18 we scored. I thought we'd miss more than that.
But that's the game.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah. But I genuinely thought we'd miss more than that on how I watched the game. As I say, I didn't watch it in one straight stretch. I wish I could have done. It looked like it was a really entertaining game.
It just looked like it was just frustration at the end. The reaction for me, it was because the Kings were there for to be taken and then kind of took it away from ourselves.
There were too many possessions down the stretch where I always
it's games like where we were cold as well, didn't we?
Yeah, there's games like last night where I'm sitting there thinking there's a couple of things I always remember Dante saying earlier in the season where he's sticking his nose in the huddle down the stretch and Mose is always saying to them, just keep going for singles, don't go for the knockout punch, and you're thinking. I can't remember exactly. We were down five with a couple of minutes to go, and we turned it, and we got the lead back. And you're thinking there were still some possessions in there where we settled for threes, or we weren't attacking the basket the same. And it's like just find a good attempt, just find a good shot attempt. Don't settle for the outside shot. Teams are gonna let us have that because we've proven we can't knock it down consistently throughout the season. The games where like the Sacramento game when we played them away in January, we had a franchise record 25 in the game, but that doesn't happen very often with this team. Teams are going to let us have those threes, but that's what got us the lead. There was the Franz drive and the Euro step and the floater over the top of the defender. I think it was Malik Monk. And then you had Cole drove into the lane and he had that really, really difficult sort of double clutch finish. And you got good looks by getting to the basket. But there's too many stretches in games where we go away from those sorts of looks. And it doesn't help when you got players like Franz, who is really struggling shooting a three. I know he made one last night, but we got to play to our strengths. And there's too many stretches where we let teams dictate the looks we're getting and we're sort of settling for those a little bit too much for my liking. But
I do think that one of the things that knocked us a little bit was in losing Caleb Houston
as well. Yeah, that was a big loss.
Because your guy who's come in to replace your injured starting shooting guard goes out. Did he play all in the second half?
No, Cole started the second half.
That's at that point you're then changing your rotations. You lose Cole from the impact that he has coming on as part of that second unit. Yeah. I think that possibly had a little bit of a disjointing effect on us as well.
Mm-hmm. But we let that one get away. For sure.
We did. It was there to be won by the looks of things.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break to tell you about our partners' attraction tickets. So if you're looking for tickets and hotels to the world's best theme parks and attractions, then check out Attraction Tickets. They are the UK's number one attraction ticket provider for Walt Disney World, Universal Studios, SeaWorld, Disneyland Paris, and other popular destinations. Attraction tickets also sell Orlando Magic tickets at hugely competitive prices. So when you're booking your next holiday, use our link in the description and see what they have to offer. You can also visit our website, letstalkmagic.com, for all our affiliate links and discount codes, including the NBA store and Fanatics. So we've talked about JI. Now I want to talk a little bit more about the defense overall. So Paul, what are the Magic doing really well on the defensive end of the floor for you?
Intensity and teamwork. They understand the system, they understand each other's roles, and they understand that if they need assistance, that assistance is going to come.
Mm-hmm.
It would appear that each guy is able to cover the other. It would appear that each guy is able to cover. Not necessarily one through five as Jonathan Isaac can, but they are able to cover multiple positions in the defensive system. I think the biggest problem we still have is getting back off of turnovers. We can't, as soon as we make that mistake of a live ball turnover, we can't get reset. But you look at our defense of the paint. Let's start with that. Our defense of the paint is well set up. They cover the arc one through five really, really well. Mm-hmm. They are out and challenging the three-point shot, but they have the lateral movement and the ability to quickly move to cover and fight the way through a screen to get back into the paint to cover those positions. It's that is seen as very, very effectively reducing the number of points that we concede in the paint. Last time I looked, and I doubt it's changed particularly from last night, we were eighth, I think it was, in the league on defence of the paint, points in the paint. We were eighth last I looked. We were conceding something like 48 a game.
Since the All-Star break, we're fourth. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm looking at that's the season one, looking on the season, which is where I go with when I'm doing the previews. I didn't do one for last night for obvious reasons, but that's where we were, around 48 a game. What's the figure? What's it since All-Star then, mate? Is it the actual number that we've conceded?
44.1.
So on the season. That shows an increase in intensity that we've reduced that figure by four a game.
Yeah.
The other thing that we are outstanding at, and you had the top two teams in that category last night, is the second chance points. Opponents' second chance points. Us and Sacramento concede the least, and they work their backsides off at getting those rebounds. Again, look at that summer looks somewhere around 12 a game. We were second 11. In Sacramento. So again,
On the season,
we were around 12.
And since the All-Star break, it's down to 9.6.
Again, that just shows the phenomenal effort that they're putting in. And it's an intensity. They've bought into the idea that our defensive game is the strength, and get the defensive end right, and you will see the offensive stats increase as a result.
Mm.
And it's proving that they are working so, so hard. And if you are in the league, if you are able to defend the paint and reduce second chance points, you are always giving yourself an opportunity to win a game. If we could just drop the number of turnovers that are leading to so many. And as I look at things on a normal basis, that's one of the figures where we are performing poorly in the league. We are in the bottom third, 4 points conceded off of turnovers on the season.
And fast break points as well.
Yeah. That's, and it's those situations that are causing us the issues.
And just to back up your point there, on the season, we are averaging 14.5 opponent fast break points per game. And since the All-Star break, that's gone up to 16. So that highlights your point.
Yeah.
The increase in turnovers has led to an increase in fast break points for the opposition.
And with a young team, and with a team that are still learning their roles within this unit, and this is where I still believe that this year is a developmental year, we expect those mistakes to happen.
Mm.
And you have to live with them.
Yeah.
I don't want to see them. I want to see them improving. I want to see them reducing. But you have to live with them. It's going to happen as you're giving guys new challenges and new responsibilities.
Yeah, definitely. Agree with you, mate. Gary, looking ahead to the playoffs, we'd like to play a slower half-court game using a lot of the shot clock to generate, in general, good shot attempts for the most part. How does the way we play help make us successful in the postseason? Can the defensive side of the ball be just as effective for us in the playoffs?
Yeah, because defense wins championships, firstly. And when you look at when we play, like if we've got Jonathan Isaac, that's the thing it comes back to. If we assume we've got GI for significant minutes, we can compete with any team defensively, I think. Do we have the defensive end to win a title? Yes. I just don't think we've got the offense to win a title.
Mm-hmm.
I think the problem we face is the teams, when the intensity cranks up and the defensive end focuses more, and this new focus on defense that the league's trying to push, teams can stop us as well, because I don't think we're that difficult to stop. where you can, if we're not having, if everybody's having like an average night, you focus on Paolo, and it's then a case of will someone support him or not. But defensively, we've seen it. We've seen the best players in the league come in, and you've got two defensive player of the year candidates. Mm-hmm. If GI had the minutes and the health, GI is probably defensive player of the year, but Jalen Suggs is probably the very worst on the first or second team for the guards. So,
defensive team, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You've got to say that in that sector, we've got inside, outside threat. And then you look at other players we've got. I don't think Paolo's a bad defender. I don't think Franz is a bad defender. I don't think Gary Harris is a bad defender. We know Anthony Black can defend. We know Markel can disrupt and defend. We know Goga can cause problems. So we've got players there, like Chuma, if he comes off the bench, he can do that. Will the rotations change? Yes. Will minutes get changed? Yes. But our core guys can defend on the most part. I think the worries you've got really is a little bit in the second unit when you get Joingles, Cole and Mo Wagner on the court at the same time. Obviously, you're looking at that and saying that's probably our weaker lineups, but still, when you look at everyone else, they're at least very, very competent in that category. And I do expect the rotations and the minutes might change a little bit in the postseason, partly because that's what always happens, and secondly, to match who we play.
Yeah. And we've got the versatility. Like I said, if Mo Wagner's not doing it on the defensive end for us, you've got somebody like Goga who can come in and provide us more as well.
Well, I would expect if we, for example, play in Milwaukee, that you'll see Goga.
Yeah.
I would expect that. Whether we do or we don't, I don't know, but that's what I would expect to see if you're up against Lopez.
It's possible. It's possible.
I've got to be honest, in the last two games, I would have had no objection to seeing Goga getting some starting minutes.
Yeah, he's been good.
With the guys who you were up against centre wise, I think Goga would have been a good option for that more physical game.
Well, when you're playing against a huge centre, that's where you kind of see Wendell have some shortcomings. You know, like he's had it. Jonas Valanciunas is a problem. Lopez could be potentially a problem in the playoffs. Those are the types of guys. Whereas, yeah. But he's a problem because of the way he plays the game. Wendell causes problems, strangely, in my opinion, for guys like Jokic.
Yeah.
The guys, I think, who expect the calls, he plays them hard and they don't like it because he doesn't back down from them. But the actual bruiser senders who don't expect that can exploit the size difference a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. So we sit here with just 11 games remaining at 42-29, fifth in Eastern Conference. As it stands, we are half a game back of New York in fourth, 1.5 games back of Cleveland in third, and we're 2 games up on Indiana, who are sixth. According to Tankathon, we've got the 16th hardest remaining schedule. New York 17, and Cleveland have the 6th easiest. Before our next episode, which is on Thursday, the Magic will just play the Warriors at home. Cleveland have Miami tonight, Charlotte on Monday and Wednesday. Meanwhile, New York face Detroit on Monday and the Raptors on Wednesday. So, boys, how are we feeling with 11 games remaining? Who finishes where? How do you think the standings are going to shake out? How do you think Gary, things might change before Thursday?
Gary, I feel that you and I have got to pass this to Mikey to start with, because we had this discussion on Friday night as part of our Discord group conversation. So Gary and I can't change our answers because there's a group there's already know what we believe. Quickly, I will say I had New York third, us fourth, Cleveland fifth.
Okay.
Interesting. I
can't remember exactly what I had, but I had the Cavs coming out with the best record, and I had us and the Knicks as very, very similar.
You had, mate, you had us and the Knicks on the same record, and Cleveland winning one more game. I think you had us at 50, New York at 50, and Cleveland at 51.
But thanks. You've got a better memory than me, Paul. my worry is, the same worry that it's always been, is that we've got this stretch of games now where we had New Orleans, Sacramento, and then we've got the Warriors and we've got the Clippers. Mm-hmm. And what I don't want out of those four games, and like, thankfully we've got a win, but I didn't want a losing record at the end of those four. So we've got to get one at least out of the Warriors and Clippers game for me, because I think they're problem games. The problem games, my nightmare was 0-4. Well, no, it's not going to be that, but I wouldn't be thrilled with 1-3, put it that way.
Especially after you look how competitive we were last night.
It's how tight as well. Yeah. It's just how tight everything is. So, yeah.
But that's where we were.
That's where we were.
Because the conversation was, we spoke about each team very quickly as to these are the games that those teams have got. How many wins do you see them getting? And then kind of on the average as to where things were. Our group as a whole had, it worked out as Cleveland third, us and New York on, as Gary had, on a level result, on a level wins, which meant that with us having the
tiebreaker,
we were finishing fourth and having home court. So, Murky, your turn, mate. On the spot.
I think if I'm being realistic, my heart tells me it's gonna play out the way it already stands now.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cleveland have the easiest remaining schedule out of the three teams,
but are with injuries.
But they've proven they can play without injuries. They went on that massive run, missing Garland and Mobley for a long time. And actually, that kind of worked for them. They found something else that actually worked really well for them. So they've also proven they could play with a bit of adversity themselves. But the fact that they've got one of the easier remaining schedules. I mean, they've got the Hornets three times. They've got the Grizzlies. They've got Indiana, who are in and amongst where we are. They've got Philly as well. So it could affect... I mean, it could affect maybe six. I don't think we're going to drop any further back than where we are now. I think we're competing with New York for fourth. I want to say we could get third. I think we could, but, and we've got quite a few home games still to play. But like I said, we've got Milwaukee twice, we've got the Pelicans again. They're going to want revenge going back to their place. The Clippers. The Clippers coming to us, I quite fancy that game. And the Warriors game, we've proven over the last few years that we're capable of beating them at home. And they are not the team that they once were. So,
One of the things that we've got to look at as well with our schedule is that those final three games, you could actually see players not necessarily being involved from...
We've got Milwaukee, we've got Philly, and we're two games against Milwaukee and one against Philly, Paul. Yeah.
So Milwaukee could have already, by that point, secured second.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not chasing, there aren't enough games left to chase Boston down.
Yeah.
So they just need a few more wins to settle down and be in. Securing that second spot, you could see a different team for Milwaukee coming out against us. That could potentially affect those games. Whereas at that point, we could still be in that battle for home court. We've got something to play for.
Just looking at the standings, this is not really related to us, but I'll tell you what, Milwaukee don't want to face Miami in the first round, will they?
No, not at all.
If they make it through that playing game, then if they end up in the play-in, they're only, what, they 1.5 games back of Indiana, so they could still catch them. But yeah, Milwaukee, Miami in the first round could be a bit tasty. But yeah, going back to the Magic, I just think, what have we got? 11 games left. If we could get, to win 50 games this season would be insane.
Absolutely.
If you could win 9 of the last 11 games, which I don't think's impossible, I really don't, to get as close to 50 games as you can, then I think that probably would be enough for fourth. I'm not sure it's going to quite catch Cleveland with the games that they've got left, but yeah, I just think my head says we're going to be playing New York in the first round. They'll get home court. I think we'll just miss out. But that's not being negative, because I still think even if they get home court, we're more than capable of beating New York in a 7-game series. And if Jai Hyde keeps playing like he is, if Franz can get a rhythm going with 11 games left, if he can start hitting the three a little bit more consistently and Jalen finds a rhythm again, there isn't any of those teams other than Boston that really scare me, if I'm honest. We're capable of beating anybody. It's just that experience over a 7-game series and the adjustments that come with it. But I think we're going to stay fifth. That's where my head's at the moment.
I think there's a couple of little side stories just to watch on it, Mikey, because like, obviously you said about Franz, and I thought we saw a bit of fourth quarter Franz last night. He looked really good in the second half. We've seen sixth man Cole reemerge, and with G.I., like, he's looked more like Cole in the last few games, and G.I. is doing those things. So I don't think anyone will be saying, oh, like, it's a gimme against Orlando apart from Stephen A. Smith. But
nobody really listens to him anyway, do they?
We haven't really got much choice, have you, to be honest? But I think the two schedules to watch are the Pacers and the Bucks for different reasons. So the Pacers' upcoming schedule is interesting because they've got the Lakers and Clippers on a back-to-back. And I think they're capable of beating the Lakers. Clippers, who knows, but it's a back-to-back. They've got the Bulls, the Lakers, a doubleheader against the Nets, the Thunder, the Heat, the Raptors, the Cavs, and the Hawks. Like, they could get 7 or 8 wins there. Like, and I know we can say that for anyone because we're talking about good teams here.
Sure.
The Bucks interest me, though, because you've got the whole, they control in some ways, wittingly or unwittingly, what happens here, because you've got the whole, do they want to play in Miami? Which could be a factor. Mm-hmm. The other factor is if you're a, I'm not a huge Doc Rivers advocate these days in terms of where the game's at and where he's at. But Doc Rivers isn't stupid, and he's been an analyst for a long time as well as a coach. And he's got to look at that closing one and go, well, if the Bucks are being smart and you're looking at the makeup of their team, that injuries have done them since they won the title. So you would sit there and think, would Brook Lopez and Chris Middleton to be rested as the season closes? Because you would expect that they're going to finish in 2 or 3, which isn't that big a thing, really. So the Magic at the end could face the Bucks, where they're actually resting key guys not to get injured in the playoffs and have like a shorthanded team. So there is that. We might do the same. Who knows? But I don't think so due to the tightness of it all. Yeah. But the Bucks could look at that as well. 2 of their last 3 games are against us. So they might look and say, well, do we want to play Orlando in the first round or not? And if it's that tight, try to dictate that. And again, they've got some winnable teams in there. Lakers, Pelicans, you know, the Hawks, the Wizards, the Grizzlies, the Raptors. They're teams that they could sweep aside in the lead up to that. So I think it's interesting of whether Milwaukee would look at this and go, are we going to rest people? Or are we going to try and hold our future in our own hands? Because I expect it to be tight between them and the Cavs. They might be asking the question of, do we fancy playing against Miami? Or do we fancy playing against, say, Orlando or Indiana? Dictating what they do.
So are you looking at them perhaps looking to drop to fourth?
I'm looking at them perhaps deciding whether they want to be in second or third.
Because if we if they drop to sec, if they stay second, we'd have to be into the play-in tournament. If they dropped to third, we'd have to have gone to sixth.
Right.
Yeah.
So if the second.
So you're looking at us then, I know it's only one spot, and we're kind of then looking around what the Indiana Pacers do, which comes to what you were talking about before.
But yeah. Would you rather play?
I'm just getting it straight to my mind, mate.
Yeah, it's my bad explanation, but if I was
I'd got where you were entirely. Yeah. I was just getting it straight.
Would you rather play a young team or would you rather play an experienced playoff team? How do they view us? Do they look at it and go, we want to play against, like, I think the dream matchup for them is Indiana, and I'm not slighting Indiana, but the size and the paint is something Indiana struggle with. Mm-hmm. So that's their dream. But if it's a one where they're thinking Orlando or Miami, will they look at it and go, we want to play playoff Jimmy Butler, who brings his own thing and a team that can run to the finals and cause damage with probably the best coach? Or do we want to go up against a team that's actually got the two defenders who can struggle out, really push our two stars the most? Because Lillard's going to be guarded by Suggs and Giannis is going to go up against GI. And then it's how much confidence they've got in the rest of their team. I just think it's an interesting one about how Milwaukee could think themselves, do we want to be second or third?
I can still see the Cavs falling away.
Yeah.
I can still see the Cavs falling away, regardless of their schedule.
It's not impossible, Paul, at all.
They've lost the last 2-4-6 in the last 10 played. They aren't in a rich vein of form. They do have consistent niggles to key guys. They've got key guys who are out. You're looking at Donovan Mitchell having had that nasal surgery, not being reevaluated. I think it's another week. Then you've got Strus, who's out. Max Strus, he's out for last couple of games, I think. He's certainly out of tonight's game against Miami. Mobley, he's been questionable for one or two games recently. They're having little niggles that are affecting their rotations.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not coming in from a position of confidence.
Yeah.
I don't think it's unfair though, Gary, with you saying Milwaukee would likely want to face Indiana in the first round.
Yeah,
they're a bottom five, bottom six defense in the league. Like,
yeah.
I mean, we proved it earlier in the season, didn't we? You play against a juggernaut of a defensive team. Like Milwaukee might be middle of the pack. They might be league average defensively, but we've seen in the last few years they are capable of being good defensively as well. Whether they're healthy is another question, and whether Lillard can step up. I mean, they're missing key players like Drew Holiday from last year and their title winning team, but
one of the consensus from the conversation on Discord was that nobody will really relish if Miami get through the assuming that they're in the playing tournament. If they get through that playing tournament, nobody will relish playing them as the seventh or eighth seed, because they're going to come in and they're going to give you a battle.
Yeah.
And they've got guys who have a hell of a lot of experience of that type of competition.
Yeah. I wouldn't want to face them in the first round.
No. No, they did it last year and they're capable of turning teams over again.
Yeah. Yeah. I think where we're at.
And I need
I think
to go wash my mouth out with soap.
I think if we can get. I think we're going to be about 40. I think 48, 49 wins is where we're going to end up.
Yeah. Yeah.
With 11 left. So
anything can happen.
Anything can happen. We'll see. We'll see. Anything you guys want to finish with at all?
Nah, mate. All good. No, all good. All good. I think we've covered it rather well.
I think we have. Yeah. That's going to do it for this week. Thank you for listening and watching. Before we go, we just want to say a big thank you to our patrons for helping support the show. So thank you for your incredible support to Barry Conn, Paolo and Fran's Warmth, Ollie Law, Gary Clark, Angus Craig, Dylan Holden, Alan Kane, Tom Soane, Mark Joss, Sean Moore, Liam Radbourne, Andy Linley, Stuart Benzies, Drum Drum, Drummy Drum Drum, and Podfather Phil loves Hazy Northwest, and I love that one. If you're interested in joining our Patreon, we've got three tiers available with varying benefits. Just visit patreon.com/letstalkmagic to join today. If you enjoyed today's episode, give it a thumbs up, leave us your comments and thoughts, and don't forget to subscribe. You can also like us on Facebook, follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and X @_letstalkmagic. So from Gary, Paul, and myself, until next week, go Magic.